You are listening to Para X. To Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para-X Radio Network. Now, tonight's opening song, Grizzly Reminder, by Midnight Syndicate, is pretty spot on to what we're going to be talking about this evening. Many of Hollywood's late greats didn't leave this world peacefully, as one might hope, and you could say that some of them definitely did leave a grisly reminder on the way out, and perhaps some of them were grisly and they're still sticking around. But there are a lot of stories about Hollywood's dearly departed, and, here comes the clever segue, Scott Michaels, owner of Dearly Departed Tours, has a very cool new tour that he's here to talk about tonight. It's called the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, and it's a guided walking tour down the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, also known as Hollywood Boulevard, where scandals, murders, and tragic deaths have actually occurred. And we're going to talk about a new documentary in the works with some fascinating new additions to the Dearly Departed brick and mortar store, and naysayers. In other words, we've got a whole lot to cover tonight, so Scott, come on in and share some of the dirt.
Hello, Marla.
Hello, hello. Oh, God, you sounded... Never mind. it just reminded me of somebody, but I can't put my finger on it, but it was just like, okay.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Well, you know what? Every time I post a banner saying that you're going to be back, people get really happy. I mean, happier than a lot of times when I post banners. I mean, I had comments today like, oh, I love listening to Scott. And someone over in the UK said, please give Scott my best regards, say hello. I mean, you've got a very loyal following, whether you know it or not. And I think you do. At least I hope you do.
I think I'm very fortunate. Something I've done or that I do strikes a chord with people. And because I'm not afraid to, make a bad joke, or I think that makes people a little bit more at ease at things like the things that I talk about, because I think everyone has an interest in this. Just some people can't embrace that, and I think that my maybe I bring it down to a little less intimidating level. I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of full of myself, but I do think that we all like this kind of stuff. It's just that. How it's presented is different, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, the first time I ever, when you were with Graveline and took the tour, that fateful night with Kenny Kingston.
Oh, I love Kenny.
I know. That was, I mean, fateful because it was a million years ago, and that's actually where you and I met. But I think, I mean, the tour was great, but it was the presentation that just absolutely won me over immediately, because it was so different than anything I had expected, and I didn't really know what to expect. And I was like, wow, this is really, really, really good. So, I mean, right from the get-go, and I'm not an easy one to please. I mean, ask people. I get kind of snarky a lot.
Snarky is good.
And I think I've gotten snarkier since I've known you, because you're so free with it, you know, that I'm comfortable using it too. But so, okay, so here's the interesting thing. I just said that Hollywood Boulevard is a site of, like, scandals, murders, tragic deaths, but I'm not so sure that the average tourist, or even perhaps some of Hollywood's residents, see it that way. I mean, it's probably one of the best-known streets in the world, but we don't often hear about the dark side of the boulevard because, first of all, that would be bad for tourism. But to those who are interested in Hollywood stars and Hollywood history and its golden age, this walking tour, the Ghosts and Legends walking tour, is actually a dream come true. So where did the idea of a walking tour, and especially down Hollywood Boulevard, come from?
Well, Hollywood Boulevard, as you know, I mean, you're a lifelong Hollywood resident. Yeah. The Boulevard means different things to different people. I mean, it could be glorified business cards, which are what those stars in the Walk of Fame are. you know, I mean, they're for a price. You buy them, and that's all good too, because it's part of the tradition of Hollywood. Everything has a price tag on it. But, you know, it's an 8-block stretch of Hollywood Boulevard that has these stars, and people like wandering down the boulevard anyway just to read the names and see the sights. What most people generally don't think of much more aside from the Chinese Theater and the El Capitan and what's now the Dolby Theater, and they stick around that little 2-block stretch. For the people that go a little bit further on, there's so many interesting points to Hollywood Boulevard that are largely overlooked by visitors and not really explored enough by locals, I think, as well. Or when you are walking down Hollywood Boulevard, you're doing it with your head down and you're not looking up and seeing the cool things that you walk past all the time. You know, the Egyptian or Musso Frank restaurant or Larry Edmonds bookstore, or, you know, it's just, there's so many wonderful little things on Hollywood Boulevard that people tend to miss. And all of those things have amazing stories behind them. And sometimes, you know, locals alike, we like to hear those stories. And that's my job. That's my job.
And you do it so well. But yeah, I mean, just walking down, I mean, people don't realize that those buildings are ancient. I mean, they're really old. Maybe not, you know, like over in Europe. But for L.A., they're really old buildings. Some of them are like 100 years old. Wow. And even a little bit more. But, I mean, if you look at them, you look at the storefronts, because, as you said, people don't usually look up. If you look above the storefronts, because all these are 2- and 3-story buildings, and some of them obviously are taller, but there are neat things like gargoyles. If you look, you see them, you know.
If
you don't expect them or you're not looking, it's just kind of, it's kind of sad, in a sense. And, you know, when I was a kid, oh, God, that was, you know, in the dark ages with the covered wagon, we used to take the bus up to Hollywood and Highland, you know, from where we lived, my grandmother and I, and then we would walk from Highland to Vine Street. That was like the main bit. And we'd go up one side and then back down on the other side, always looking at things. And things didn't change too much there. I mean, they've been a lot more transient in more recent years. But that was the thing. People were out on Hollywood Boulevard. They were walking up and down. And people were wearing, like, men were wearing hats and suits, and women were wearing gloves and frilly dresses and stuff. I mean, because that was kind of a sign of the times. And it wasn't nearly as crowded, which I think is good and bad at the same time. But I remember when the Walk of Fame, you know, started putting things down, it started getting busier, and people were like, wow, look at this. And all the while, nobody thought that, you know, somebody in the business would be walking out in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater and get killed, da-da, you know, or somebody else was just down the block over by the Knickerbocker, one of their favorite character actors who dropped dead. You know, people don't think that. And why don't you tell the story about Victor Killian?
Victor Killian was, he was a character actor from the golden age of Hollywood. I think, I'm pretty sure, and we used to say this on Graveline, and I think it's true, and never mind, I'm not even going to perpetuate it if it's a myth, but he'd been around for a long time. He'd been in John Wayne movies, and a significant amount of success. You know, he's a jobbing actor. He actually worked, and that's saying something for Hollywood. And he lived in a hotel called the Lido, which was on Wilcox and Yucca, actually right across the street from where Carol Burnett grew up. And it's the same hotel that was, the lobby was photographed for Hotel California. Anyway, it was in 1977. His success at this point was on television on a show called Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. And one night, it was in February of, I believe, 1977, he was beaten to death in his apartment. He was watching television. He still had his little earplug in his ear. And someone in his apartment beat him to death. And he was found the next day by his nurse. So it's still an unsolved crime, and there is the legend of Victor Killian walking back and forth in front of the Chinese Theater looking for his killer. And I never really quite understood why that area, you know, right. Was you know, so many blocks away from where he was murdered. And but it was explained to me that possibly he knew his killer. He traveled that route. Maybe it was I don't know. He was a regular at a bar, from what I understand, and he traveled that route. And and apparently he knew his killer. And this is according to, you know, I should say psychic readings or ghost hunters or things like that. And Killian had walked that pathway with his killer at one point in time, maybe not that night, but had done that before. So he is said to walk back and forth across Hollywood Boulevard by the Chinese Theater looking for this man or this person who murdered him. It's a sad story. And interestingly, the Ghost Hunters show went there recently, and they were investigating him. And for some reason, Victor Killian supposedly haunts the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, which is only about 5 years old. But as you know, too, there are those hauntings that belong to areas. And so if he is haunting Hollywood Boulevard around that area, it's conceivable that he may wander in there and at Madame Tussauds. But it wouldn't be the first place I would look for him if it were, you know, if I were trying to find him.
No, exactly not. And from paranormal kind of terms, what people might think is him and what they may see him walking back and forth in that direction could be residual energy too, not an active haunting, but just something because he did it so often, he left his footprint sort of there, and it just happened.
But it would be the main floor too, I think, because if it is a residual thing, he'd be on the same floor that he was murdered on. He'd be in the same surface, and that was an empty parking lot back in the 70s. So more than likely, if he was there, if it was residual, he'd be on the same level, I would imagine. He wouldn't be crawling around the third floor, I don't think.
Well, you never know. I mean, you know, when you're over there, you can do anything you want. So maybe he is.
But isn't residual, I mean, it's not really, I don't know. There are so many stories. Like, remember when we did that investigation in the basement of the bank building?
Yes.
And there was a little girl that haunted it, but you can only see like half of her because it happened in the house that used to be on that location back in, you know, the 19 teens. And,
yeah.
So that is just my impression. I'm certainly not a paranormal expert. That's just my take on it.
No, but you're a good investigator, actually, when you want to be.
Right. Well, I mean, I do sit there and go, yeah, whatever, you know, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would be you if you didn't, but I mean, beyond that, I mean, you're okay. I have to grant you that. You are okay. Now, speaking of that.
We both had enough experiences together that I certainly know that that stuff exists now, and we've certainly experienced it together, unmistakable things, but there have been a couple of instances that we've been involved with that were kind of major eye roll material.
Yeah, and you do that really well. Now here, you know,
I choose my moment very carefully. Only when you and I make eye contact, and no one else can see me.
And I know this sounds really romantic, but it's not. But we have done that across a crowded room for different situations. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So anyway, you're talking about this haunted bank building with the little girl. Now, that's the one at Hollywood and Highland, and it's one of the buildings on the boulevard that kind of fascinates me because we did find stuff in that basement there. There was stuff going on, but that was kind of like all in the past. And we picked up stuff like in the humongous bank vault. And the thing that struck me as completely odd about the building was not its past per se, but this is a beautiful 13-story building built back in 1927, a mixture of kind of Art Deco, Gothic, Spanish design. And it has gargoyles, which, you know, gets my stamp of approval on that. But it is nearly completely empty. I mean, it's unrentable, they say. And when we were there, the guy that was the manager of the wax museum that, you know, had his office down there, he said that day that we were there, he said there were only like 5 suites rented, period.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I don't know. But see, back then, this was, I don't know, maybe 8. I don't even think I started Dilly Departed at that point. Or it was in its very early stages. So it has to be 9 years ago or 10 years ago that we started doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so Hollywood Boulevard, although it was coming back, isn't to the degree that it is now in the sense that, you know, people are scrambling to get into places. But there that building sits still, as far as I know, completely empty. Mm-hmm. So it was cheap real estate back then, but it was still empty. But it was empty then, and it still is today. Now it makes a little bit more sense. They're probably waiting for something magical to happen, and, you know, somebody's going to buy it for some ridiculous amount of money. That seems to be the way things are going. But there is still not only does it look sinister, but when we were down there, we certainly got that sinister vibe, most definitely, down in that vault. I mean, that vault was crazy.
It was,
like an 8-foot, one of those 8-foot giant round doors that you'd take like 3 people to move. It was crazy.
Yeah, was that not cool? I like that part. And I think there was something on the floor that if you stepped on, something moved, and I think you stepped on it and kind of went a little wobbly. I don't remember what it was, though.
Yeah, I think it was a piece of metal or something. It was taken aback because, you know, we were down there. It was even before our investigation started in the wax museum next door. And he sort of said, hey, you want to go down real quick? And so I think was it just you and I that went down there? And Mark, I think, was his name, the manager.
Yeah.
And so it was just the 3 of us. And he was telling us the stories about, you know, being in the office alone and having footsteps going up to the door. And I think he said he even saw a shadow outside the door, but when he opened it up, there was no one there. So, and also there were, you know, then Victoria came down later on and got some very interesting sort of, she picked up on some odd things that were not nice.
Right, and, you know, if you lived way down in the bowels of an old bank building, you might not be nice either. But it just surprises me because you would think it's prime property. Now, one of the reasons that they said that they were having trouble renting in the building was that they didn't have dedicated parking. They didn't have an underground parking lot, and I guess maybe people didn't want to park in the parking lot that was, you know, up the street just a little bit or something. But they said that was a major downfall. But there are other reasons. I mean, the manager's stinky vibe. I mean, not literally stinky, but I mean, scary vibe. Nobody wants to be there. It is dark. It is kind of ominous feeling. I mean, it's not a welcoming building at all, and it really does look very gothic on the outside. And the inside is just kind of, you know, it's got a good creep factor to it, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. It's a magnificent building. It's gorgeous. And for the longest time, it was the tallest in L.A., which is sort of hard to grasp, you know, because it's not that big. But yeah, you're right. It looks like if you were going to walk down the boulevard and find and say, that's a haunted building, that's the one, you know, that's the one you'd look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, and you can see it from, you know, blocks away, too. So that even helps. I mean, the other building that is a little bit creepy and always was to me, too, is the Taft Building, which, you know, at Hollywood and Vine, which is now, you know, people are clamoring to get office space there, entertainment companies and things like that. But I remember it 1,000 years ago, and it was, I think my grandmother went to the dentist in there, and it was this huge, I mean, it's a huge, tall building, all kind of brick-like, and we went in there, and I remember she was having dental work done, and I walked over to the window, and the window was, you know, way bigger than I was. I mean, huge window, and you open it, there was no screens in those days. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you could just take a nice tumble out of those windows. You know, I don't know why they didn't screen them in, but it is kind of a creepy building as well, or was anyway.
Yeah, you couldn't, and back in the day, you know, they were renting nice offices for probably, you know, $300-$400 a month. And then even in the 80s, it was dirt cheap. It was less than $1,000 a month to rent a building, or rent an office in one of those buildings. But it is interesting, the amount of building that's going on in Hollywood and how people are, you know, paying ridiculous amounts of money for apartments in those places. I mean, upwards of $1 million. It's insane to live in Hollywood and find where there is no parking and it's just congested all the time. And, you know, but everyone wants that address.
Yeah, I saw that they, across the street from the Taft Building, there's that building that used to be a insurance company or something, and now it's all lost.
And the Broadway has been sold all out for years, the old department store, and it's interesting. It's a good thing. Ultimately, the line I always use is that, you know, they've made it so the people that never left can't really afford to stick around, and that makes me sad. But you know, that's progress.
Well, you know, and you would think that lots of places that used to be on the boulevard and are now long gone in the business sense of what they were might have left a ghostly mark, like, you know, the massive Hollywood Hotel at Hollywood and Highland, which is now the Dolby Theater and the big shopping center and Hard Rock Cafe. I mean, the Hollywood Hotel, I think, went all the way to the Chinese Theater, maybe farther. I don't remember.
It was a massive, I went up to Orchid Street, which is, you know, right alongside the Chinese. But yeah, right. Gorgeous wooden structure, absolutely beautiful, and one of the first to go. You know, but it's kind of comforting when you go down the street a little bit and you can find, you know, Musso and Frank's or the Frolic Room, which isn't that old, but it still has been there for many, many years and continues to do well, and that makes me happy, because there are those throwbacks to, you know, the golden age of Hollywood, and the Frolic Room is one of my favorite places.
But I miss places like C.C. Brown's, the ice cream parlor. I mean, that in itself was wonderful. And, you know, I used to work at Hollywood and La Brea in the high rise. Do you know what that was before they built that?
No.
It was a theater called the Music Box Theater. You know, just where they did stage shows and stage plays. And it was really old. It had been there for years and years and years. And for some reason, I can't find any reference to it. I've Googled it like crazy, but I was actually there. Because when I was a kid, you know, I was with the little famous little Meglin Kitty stupid thing. Not stupid thing, but I mean, just little kitty actors and tap dancers, whatever. And we put on shows there. So I was there. And it, I mean, it was old. And when we weren't like rehearsing, the kids, we would all kind of run around into the dressing rooms, and there were old trunks full of neat things that were probably there since, you know, Hector was a pup kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they tore that down. I think it was in like 1968 or something. It was there that long.
Wow.
Because when I started working at at Hollywood La Brea in the high rise, it had only been open for like a year or two. I mean, built for a year or two.
Wow. I'll look into that. That's interesting. I might be able to find something about that place, but
yeah.
I never knew that. It's really interesting. Huh.
Oh, something you didn't know. Hey, this is good. Because you really, I'm not being creepy or anything. You really know almost everything.
Well,
so,
you're being very kind, but I know a bit. I know a bit.
No, you know a lot because I just, I could sit and listen for a long time. I got a question from the chat room. Moof wants to know what the creepiest place for you is. And I'm assuming maybe wrongly that she's talking about Hollywood Boulevard, maybe?
As far as the creepy in life, the only place that really kind of weirded me out in a big way was the Wonderland house, being in that house. It's just really a bizarre feeling to be in that house where those people were bludgeoned to death and it was so quiet, and sitting on the floor in those rooms where the victims laid was it was a definite creep factor. And I've been in a lot of places where people died, and that was one that really stood out as very, very creepy. But on the boulevard, aside from some of the lunatics that hang out on the boulevard, there's a couple of locations. One is the Wax Museum. Spending the night in the Wax Museum was certainly up there as one of the weirdest, creepiest things. Mm-hmm. And also that alley at Bordner's.
Alongside
Bordner's, which has definitely got some bad things in it. And it's the creep factor is high there in the alley, most definitely.
It is. I was just like, whoa, what is this? I never had to go through something like that before. I was like, oh, this is really strange, and then had to go check it out.
Cabana 213 at the Roosevelt Hotel. That is a story that I can't tell enough times. I think it's one of the best ghost stories on the boulevard. And it certainly, and we spent the night in there, and it was highly creepy, more so for you guys, because you actually did spend the night. I left early. But that was one weird night.
My pal, yeah. You set it up for us and then had to go feed your dog. Yes. Okay. I'm not even going to go there. But is there one particular building that really draws you in on the boulevard?
Every bar.
That's on the mundane level, yeah. That's a given.
Well, there's an element of that, too, because, I like to go to Bordner's Bar, Bordner's Bar is quite active in that, there are places I've always wanted to go into that I never have, but I like the places where people go to, to blow off steam, and it's nice to know that those people are still there blowing off steam. I really like that. So, confirmed haunted places, Bordner's is up there, the bar, and then the Frolic Room as well. They're both places I really, really like.
I like your little neon sign. I'm going to digress for a minute because I have another question from chat, and I think it's an interesting one that we'll bring up, and then we're going to talk about some other stuff. But Bonnie wants to know what your thoughts are on Mickey Rooney being interred at Hollywood Forever.
Well, I think it's appropriate. I think that Mickey has Mickey is Hollywood. Mickey was one of the last of the Golden Age, and Hollywood Cemetery more so than Westwood, where Marilyn is. Hollywood Cemetery is more of a nod to the original Hollywood players, DeMille and Valentino, and Mickey Rooney isn't amongst that era, really, at least not a Valentino, but I think it's appropriate. I think it's really appropriate that he's there amongst his Hollywood peers.
Some of them, yeah. I just thought it was strange. I would think that, because I just saw pictures, so I'm not 100% sure, but he's buried kind of like in a communal crypt, isn't he? I mean, they're like
they built, you haven't been there in a while, but the Cathedral Mausoleum where Valentino is, outside of it, there was that large sort of parking area that is, and it's probably about 75% crypt now. And that whole parking area is completely gone. So Mickey is, it's a row of crypts, couch crypts, which means, you know, lengthwise, and there's probably a stack of 10 of them, you know, going up the wall. So it's not communal. He's got his own individual crypt with his own, will be his own individual place. It's not like a cremation niche that fits 10.
And he's down on one of the lower levels, right?
He is, which is
appropriate,
you know, real estate, really. That's where you want to be. And I don't know what kind of arrangement they made with the cemetery, because apparently Mickey wasn't worth very much when he passed away. And I think a conservative estimate for that grave would be probably, I don't think I'm overreaching. I would say about $50,000. That's my guess, because I know that when I worked there very briefly, the land by the lake was going, and this was over 10 years ago, was going for $28,000 for a grave. And that was with the guarantee that you were going to be waterlogged. That was absolutely, when you were there, you were going to get soaked. So I think Mickey Rooney's grave is safe estimate around $50,000.
Wow.
I mean, I have a little cremation niche inside that I bought 10 years ago, and I paid about $7,000 for it, I think.
Yeah. I've seen yours. I've saluted as I walked past. Just to let you know, I left a little residual energy there for you, so, you know, when you do get there, you won't be alone.
Well, I hope that's not the only property I'm going to ever own in my life.
No, there will be others. I swear, there will be others. All right. So, you know, we were talking a minute ago before this about buildings, and one thing that people know is that Dearly Departed Tours and Gallery is a brick and mortar store, is a building. And as I mentioned earlier, you've added some goodies. So what's new over there?
Well, we've been there 2 years now, and we've become sort of a catch-all when people are sending things on to us that are that we'll welcome gratefully into our collection. One of the things that landed on my doorstep fairly recently was Annette Funicello's mailbox from her last home. People that follow like what I've written over the years know that I have a weird little obsession with mailboxes, and I like them because everyone's got one, and it makes gives people more of a human, you know, touch. We all have one, so we can all relate to it. And so we have Annette's mailbox in my shop now. And I just got actually a large floral arrangement for Mickey Rooney's funeral that has a place of honor in our shop, too.
I saw the picture, and I wondered how you managed to get that. I actually gave you
it floated into my shop one day, and you know, it was either going to go to the garbage, or it was going to go to some place where people will be able to see it for years to come. So I'm proud to host it in my shop, and it's not a little arrangement either.
No,
but I'm proud to keep these things in my shop. They are history. And it's not something that, you know, everybody embraces, but it's something that I embrace, and I feel like I'm their guardian by having these things in my shop.
You have lots of things in your shop, and yes, you are a perfect guardian. And I'm glad, really, that they're out of your house now.
Me too, actually. You think of all the collective horrible things that happened that are represented in my shop. You know, also since the last time we spoke, I actually got to sit in the car that, and actually in Jay Mansfield's seat in the car that she was killed in 67. And that was something else being in there. I was, it certainly was exciting, of course, and quite, moving too. I mean, when I'm sitting there, I had to, you know, the car looks exactly the way it did after the accident, except it's, you know, 40 some years later, and it's weathered a bit, but it's still crumpled. There's still glass on the floor from the accident. It's incredible what shape this thing is, and the mirrors are still there, and the dials are still on the dashboard. And you would think that over the years they'd be picked over. And and I was asked if I wanted to sit in the seat, and you could see where her knees hit the glove box on impact, and it was really quite moving to be in that thing. So and I have her suitcase that was in the trunk of that car at 67 when she was killed. You know, Sharon Tate's fireplace, of course. And another recent addition is a charred branch that was above Paul Walker's car when it burst into flames that a nice fan had donated to the shop. So, you know, everything is being represented from, you know, Jean Harlow's blouse that was in her dressing room when she died in 1936 to this branch from Paul Walker's accident site. To anyone else, it would be a silly branch. You know, that doesn't mean anything. But when you think about what happened and it's and what caused it to be the state that it's in, it's funny how people react to that sort of thing. And for some reason, maybe it's because it's so new. But that one gets a big reaction when I explain to people what it is.
Well, somebody just asked a question in chat, private chat, and it kind of goes along with that. She was wondering, she said, do stars hate you sometimes?
Oh, probably. It's probably why I'm broke. you mean live stars?
Well, the dead ones probably will come back and get you in a different way, but I guess, I have to tell on you about the Bernie Capel story because you know that I worked with Bernie for about 3 or 4 months writing or ghostwriting his autobiography. Mm-hmm. So I know him, and when I read what happened, I had to chuckle because I could see it. Although he's very quiet and soft-spoken with me, I could see, well, go ahead and tell the story, you might as well.
Well, I can't really swear.
I
forget what I asked him about. I think we talked a little bit about him being on Bewitched or there was something in particular. I can't remember exactly what we talked about. But then I had my dearly departed hat on, and he asked what that was about, and I told him what I did. And he literally jumped back and said, you know, get the heck away from me without saying the word heck. And you know, he was really quite astounded that someone would be interested in doing something like that. Now, I think it might have to do with the age of some people, because yeah. I think that younger celebrities are a little bit more hip to the fact that these things are of interest to people. Mm-hmm. But I think the older stars are. I don't think it's as much as a too close to home thing because of their age. I just think that they're astounded that people would be interested in something like that and focusing on that.
Right. All right. I've got a question.
Most of the time, people have a good time. Most of the time, people think it's a hoot, or they didn't even register. The other day, I was in one of those went to the autograph show, and I spoke to. Martin Landau was there and nothing. I had him autograph an Ed Wood poster for me. And I said, would you make it out to Dearly Departed Tours? And he's nothing. Just see, okay. And that was that. No question whatsoever. And I know he didn't know what it was. But it was very nice of him to do that. But sometimes people, here's a funny one, was Mark Lindsay from Paul Revere and the Raiders. Now, I'm a big fan of Paul Revere and the Raiders, and I knew that Mark Lindsay lived at the Cielo Drive house where the Tate murders occurred, he lived there with Terry Melcher, and then Mark Lindsay moved down, Candace Bergen moved in, and then they both moved out, and Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski moved in. So Mark Lindsay was at this the show, and I figured, how am I going to approach this? I have to ask him. It's a responsibility of mine to ask people about this. It's my own personal obsession. So I was thinking, how am I going to do this? How am I going to approach him? How am I going to bring up the fact that he lived in the house that the Manson murders occurred, or the Tate murders? And as I walked up to his little table, he had about 10 8x10 stills for sale, you know, that's the whole point of them being there. Right. And one of them is a picture of him on Cielo Drive. And it said, I had a little post-it note saying, Manson Murder House. And I thought, oh, okay, it's fair game. I can talk to him. And it was interesting to talk to him. And there's always something interesting to learn about it. And the thing that he shared with me is that I knew that the house was furnished. I knew that the same furniture that he used in that house was the same furniture that was there when Sharon and Roman lived there. The sofa was the same. You know, the bedroom furniture was the same. The dressers, etc. Those came with the house. And inside the room where the murder occurred, where Sharon and J.C. Ring were found, was a little baby grand piano. And he told me that he and Terry Melcher composed Him or Me, which is one of the Paul Revere's, you know, in the Raiders' big songs, on that piano. So this particular song that I knew my whole life is, you know, now I knew that it was composed about 10 feet away from where Sharon Tate's death occurred. So it puts a whole different spin on that song, and it's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. CC and Chatwin is asking, whatever happened to the furniture from the house?
As far as I know, it belonged to Mr. Altobelli, who owned the house. And I think that Sharon's personal things went to her family. But the furniture itself, I know that Altobelli lived in that house for a good 20 years after the murders. So I imagine, and I'm just guessing, that you know, the stuff that wasn't damaged by their deaths probably stayed in the house. And I know that, like I said, Sharon's things went to her family.
Right. Okay, I've got a loaded question for you. If someone paid you a great sum of money to spend the night at the Vogue Theater, which is on your tour along your way, alone, would you do it? And I'm not asking, I'm asking this for a reason, not necessarily for my own amusement at the thought, mind you. Mm-hmm. So answer the question, and then I'll explain why. What my motives are for asking.
Well, I mean, you know, a ridiculous amount of money, of course I'd do it, you know. I'm a whore. I got my price. And,
you're also a scaredy cat sometimes, and that's a really ugly haunt.
I can eat being a scaredy cat for a large sum of money, you know. Of course I would enjoy it. I'd be scared to death. I'd bring my iPod, and I'd sit there with probably one of those, you know, those big Phyllis Diller, you know, sleep covers for my eyes, you know what I mean? and that's probably what I would do. I'd probably try to tune everything out. But that theater is crazy haunted, I'm not going to say it would be an easy night to sit through. But I'd probably change my mind if it was a real offer.
Okay, anybody got a pony up? Well, we'll see. We never know.
Yeah, do a Kickstarter.
Yeah, let's get Scott in the Vogue Theater overnight. Yeah.
We'll do a webcam. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, CCTV works really, really good. There's two more things I wanted to get, and we've got like 15 minutes left. So I will explain why I asked about you. Well, no, I'll go ahead and ask you the question. The reason I said, would you stay alone, blah, 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 and it would be fun to watch, you know, to have it recorded, is that you've got so much going on DVD-wise. And I thought that you alone in a very haunted location for the night would make a wonderful documentary. But you do have a new documentary coming up, do you not?
We do, and that would be an interesting extra feature, definitely. Watch Scott poop his pants.
Yeah.
Why? we're putting the finishing touches on our latest documentary. We have the first one, Dearly Departed Volume 1, which covers about 18 celebrities and their deaths. And we got some amazing access to places in that one, as you know, in Albert Dekker's bathtub where he died, and in Jack Cassidy's apartment where he burned in a fire, and Gene Harlow's last home. It was pretty amazing, and none of those places we have access to anymore. So historically, I'm quite proud of that. Wow. And then Helter Skelter, 6 Degrees of Helter Skelter. And then this one is going to be called Dearly Departed Volume 2. And we have, over the years, put together a couple of films, a little 10-minute films online, of my, when I did the Wonderland house, and when we went to Yvette Vickers' house, the woman who rotted, you know, away up in Benedict Canyon. They didn't find her for several months after she died, and we got into the house before before they when it was up for sale, before it was demolished. And it was amazing the things that were still up in the house. I mean, the medicine chest was still full, and there were still canned goods in the cabinets and stuff. So we put together these, and those will be collected in on this volume, as well as a couple of new things that we've shot recently. My partner, Mike Dorsey, partners Lloyd Adams and Mike Dorsey, went up to the Paul Walker accident site, and we retraced that whole thing where his the fundraiser was going on that afternoon, and the path that the Porsche took, and where it ended up landing. And we've got some amazing footage of the memorial service that was up there. And then we finally documented on video the O.J. Simpson thing in its complete story. Back in 1994, when it happened, I had just got my first video camera, and I went out there and I documented all the scenes. And this is back when there was still yellow crime scene tape up at Nicole's house, and people were still going up to O.J.'s house and putting, you know, flowers and notes up on his door. And I saved all that footage, and we've been able to incorporate it into this new segment that we've done for this documentary. We retraced the low-speed car chase and all the way through, and the path that O.J., you know, may have taken that night. Probably did. I'm sure he did. From Nicole's to his own house, and how he easily could have made it in time. So I'm really proud of it. I think it's going to be great. It's supposed to be out in the next 6 weeks, I think. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Oh, that's fantastic! I can't wait.
I will send you a copy. I will send you a copy.
Yeah. Oh, you're so good to me. I know. All right. So here's something else that you have to deal with, and me and all of us as parapeeps have to deal with. Some of our favorite horror stars like Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney have literally left their marks on Hollywood Boulevard. And my favorite Bela story is where supposedly Peter Lorre and Vincent Price were paying respects to Lugosi at the Hollywood Boulevard mortuary, Utter McKinley, right? Where Lugosi was laid out in his Dracula costume, and Peter Lorre commented to Vincent Price as they were viewing the body and supposedly said, "Should we drive a stake through his heart just in case?" Now, that is my favorite story.
That is a great story.
It is. So now, stories like this lead to a lot of speculation. Well, actually, not only this, but I mean, in the whole para world. And in our not-so-little world, we deal with naysayers all the time. You know, they don't believe this, they don't believe that. We have cynics who believe in nothing. We have skeptics who may or may not be open-minded. We have those that tisk and roll their eyes. And, you know, some who get downright confrontational. And you must deal with a lot of naysayers from time to time.
I do. I have a fair amount of people that don't care for what I do, probably because of my lighthearted attitude about things, and the fact that I will go for a cheap joke as well. And some people just think that's disrespectful, and that's fine. To some people, it is disrespectful. I like to think you've known me long enough. You've known me over 20 years, I think, and you know me well enough to know that I'm a decent guy, and I try to do well to write by people, but I won't hesitate to go for a cheap joke. And I also won't back down from what I do. You know, I there are people that think what I do is disrespectful, and that's cool, fine. The people that get it, get it. The people that don't get it, really don't get it. And that's something I've come to learn as well, is that people, especially with the internet, sit in there in the dark in their underwear, you know, blasting off nasty emails to people. And I got my fair share over the years, but people, I say, either they get it or they don't. And the people that don't are usually pretty loudmouthed about it. And, I've got more people that support what I do than the people that don't. And,
way more.
And ultimately, those are the people I want to please.
Mm-hmm. And you do. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. People that jump up to Find a Death, and then they jump over to Dearly Departed, and you know, now that you have the videos and all that stuff out there, I mean, people can go to YouTube and watch some of the stuff and just type in, you know, Scott Michaels, and lots of good stuff comes up. Or you could put in Dearly Departed Tours or, you know, Find a Death, whatever. But I really think that maybe because we're in the para world, we kind of look at death as something that is inevitable, but maybe with a more kind of a sense of humor about it or a more openness to it because we understand it and we don't think this is the end. You know, that there's more, and where, you know, some people are sitting there rubbing their hands together thinking, oh, good, who can I haunt? You know, who can I scare when I'm over on the other side? People are making plans for that. So maybe we take it, I'm not saying taking it lightly. Nobody wants to die, but I don't think we're as afraid of dying as some who just think ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and it's over and done with. And I kind of think that some of the celebrities too, because, you know, egos in life, egos in death, you know, they're glad that you're talking about them, because what does they say? Any write-up, any review is a good review, even if it's bad, because it keeps your name in the press. And so in some ways, you may be doing that same kind of thing too. I mean, you may be perpetuating ghosts hanging out. Or at least, you know, when you're walking by and pointing to something. I get it. And everybody else I know gets it. And I think that's why I was kind of chuckling every so often. I'll see something like, you know, the thing about Bernie. And I'll kind of chuckle to myself and think, well, no, there's one that doesn't get it. You know?
Well, you know what I love? I love, like, remember when Kenny Kingston was talking about how, you know, Musso and Franks is just the way it was back in the day. You know, and he walked in and he saw Errol Flynn over there and he saw Raymond Burr over there. And I think that's like the coolest thing because, and like the Wax Museum, when it explained to me that these places are just as busy now by people who are gone or deceased, just as busy with them as it was when they were alive, because these are the places they liked hanging out. They liked being seen, and they still do.
Yeah, and they were saying how transient Hollywood is, and how people come and go, and to be able to walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Suppose you were somebody from, you know, in the Midwest and lived, you know, didn't have the money to travel. Well, I believe that when we pass, we can go anywhere we want. So we can go to all these tourist attractions. We can go to places that we've never been before. And I kind of believed what they were talking about the there were as many or more spirits in the Wax Museum the day we were investigating than there was us, I think.
Well, that's interesting. It saved me a fortune in travel if that was actually true.
You know? Yes. And a lot of people probably wouldn't do it now because they could kind of wait it out. But then, you know, then you get to the point, well, they're going to wonder, well, am I going to go to a place where I can get out to go, or am I going to be, like, you know, down below and be trapped for eternity, which witches don't believe in anyway, so I'm not worried about that. But in case anybody I know lands down there and they believe it's there, I'll, you know, pop in and wave or something. But it's just amazing, Hollywood in of itself, and the chance for people to get out and take this tour, and I mean, you know, the weather is perfect now. So tell people about the tour, where they can go to make a reservation, and, you know, whatever you feel necessary to tell.
Well, the easiest way to do it at this point, since it's a really new tour, we only started doing it a few weeks ago, is our Facebook page, Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook. And soon enough, I'll be sending more information out into the world. But the tour leaves, we do it on Saturday nights at 7. We meet at the Roosevelt Hotel, in front of the Roosevelt Hotel. And it lasts about 90 minutes, and we walk all the way down to Vine Street. And while we're doing this is when, you know, dusk. We start at dusk, and by the time we get down to Vine Street, it's nightfall, and it's really, I think it's, well, you know, it's Hollywood is so interesting, and it's a matter of showing it with in an interesting way. I mean, not only are we talking about ghosts, but we are talking about murders that happen on the Walk of Fame and celebrity deaths and amazing old historic locations. I mean, there's that old, the old Sardi's restaurant, which was on Hollywood and Vine, which is now a showgirl's, you know, booby bar. But I found out really recently that was a hip club in the 60s called the Haunted House. And it was all made up to be, you know, these big spider webs on the marquee and all these animatronic monsters inside. And they had go-go ghouls dancing on a stage, which was a giant demon, and the stage was its mouth. I mean, it's there's a couple of clips of it on YouTube, but it's really interesting to learn these things. Yeah. And it's the same place that, you know, Joan Crawford used to eat her, you know, stuffed prunes, you know, and things like that back in the golden age. So the ghosts of Hollywood aren't limited to the people that used to frequent Hollywood, but also some of these locations, like the Vogue Theater, you know, that what was there before the Vogue was a house, a schoolhouse that burned and children died, and they're still playing in what was the schoolhouse, which is now the Vogue Theater. So you know, the restaurant at the Knickerbocker with the little kids, you know, darting in and out of the tables, and by the time, you know, you turn to look at these kids running, they're gone, and they weren't really even there in the first place. And and then my own experiences, you know, in the Roosevelt and in the Wax Museum, and it's, you know, I think it lends a in Bordner's and that crazy alley. And you'll be pleased to know, Marla, that I bought a K2 meter. And and while we're in front of that sinister alley at Bordner's, we attempt to contact whoever's hanging out in there, and making sure that they stay back there when we leave.
Well, Vicky said it wasn't a spirit. She said it was a demonic, just so you know.
Yeah, these people are damned, I think is what she said. And they were a lower entity. I forget what a drag, I think, is the term she used for it. But there are enough, you know, people. There's you know, the goth chick that died in the car accident. It's in the bar, and you know, we're hoping to get in touch with her. You know, the other people, as I said, I don't know what they are and what I doubt that they communicate with us, but if they did, as I say, just make sure that we leave them behind when we leave.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a quick story off the air, because we really have to run off now, about that goth chick. So stay put when we go off the air, and I'll tell you. And then we'll bring you back at some other time really soon, and we'll talk about it then. But anyway, okay, so what's Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, and is there a of any kind?
Yeah, it was DearlyDepartedTours.com and Dearly Departed Tours, preferably on Facebook, because I'm having a problem updating our website right now with this information. But the tour is going to be running through the summer on Saturday nights, and I'm really proud of it. You know, there's the mainstays, there's the Battle of the Ghosts, sees hearse, you know, the haunted hearse, and Peg Entwistle that jumped off the Hollywood sign. But there are also some stories that I think people would be surprised to learn. So I think it's just a bit of fun for people, and a little bit, well, it's like our tour, it's the Tragical History Tour.
And good exercise. All right. Well, we got to run. Thank you, Scott. Stay put where you are, and everybody, we're out of here. Stay tuned for Lily and Deborah, Happy Mediums. And until next time, everyone, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Martha Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2013. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.